Hello and welcome back to Getaway Day. As always, I am Mason, he is Gautham, and it is now the beginning of February. Technically, as we're recording this, it is still the very end of January, but by the time that this hits your ears on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, etc., it will be February. February is a pretty big deal for us here in the baseball community. Spring training is kicking off. Pitchers and catchers are reporting here in 15 days.
That sounds about right.
Probably 12. I think it's usually on the Tuesday. So we're getting really, really close. So how does that make you feel, Gowie?
Makes me feel like those 12 days can't go fast enough. I'm ready. It's the middle of winter, and it needs to be baseball season.
Spring is right around the corner, and I am excited for it. There is a lot of big things to look forward to this year, and we're going to get into that here in a few minutes. Before we do, I do have a couple things, just a little housekeeping that we need to do. We have a survey that is currently out on our social media. I do need to have you make it a pinned tweet on Twitter for me, Gowie. Forgot to do that. So we've got a survey there for all of our listeners. We're just trying to get a little bit of information about where you listen to us, kind of what things that you would like to see more of in the podcast, things like that, to help us get our content to tailored to the right people and make sure that we're putting out something that people want to listen to. So, Allie, one of our mods here, has been helping us out a lot on the social media side. She put that together for us. We would really appreciate if you would take that survey. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, any of those audio-only platforms, you can find it on our Twitter or our Facebook, at Getaway Day Pod. Gowie is going to make it the pinned tweet, and I will see if I can make it a pinned Facebook message. So that'll help us out a lot. If you enjoy our podcast, make sure that you like and subscribe on all of your favorite platforms. On YouTube, you have to hit the subscribe button and the little notification bell to make sure that you get all of our noties whenever we post a new video, or YouTube short or anything of that sort. I think that pretty well covers all of the housekeeping stuff. Is there anything else you think of, Gabby?
I think you covered it.
Perfect. So now that we got the boring stuff out of the way, not that Allie's poll is boring. It's very lovely poll. Make sure to take it. Let's get right into baseball. So we've missed a couple of weeks here of This Week in Baseball because we had Ryan Lutis on last week. If you haven't checked that one out, please do. It was a great episode. I listened to it back today just because I couldn't really digest 100% of what he said in the moment. And that was a really cool interview. So we got a lot to cover here. So, Gowie, you want to just get right into it for us? What's some of the stuff that's happened in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, the Marlins made a trade. They traded Pablo Lopez from their stable of starting pitchers and a couple prospects for Luis Arias, AL batting champion of the Twins last year. So this is a kind of interesting trade. I thought Pablo Lopez for Arias kind of makes sense, just one for one. Arias got 3 years of...
You've got some duplication audio. Do you have... we're hearing back through you a little bit.
I have no idea why that would be.
I don't either.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll try it.
Okay. So Arias won the batting title last year. He has 3 years of control left. Lopez has two. That seemed relatively fair. And then the Marlins go and add two prospects to this deal. So what do you think about what they're doing here?
I'm a little confused. Luis Arraez is a good player. Don't get me wrong, but it kind of feels like if you're moving from Pablo Lopez out of your rotation, along with some prospects, it feels like you need to get a guy who's going to fill multiple holes in your team. And Luis Arraez is definitely going to get someone or going to be there to get on base. Like the dude hit what? 325 last year or 317 or something like that.
316 with a 375 OBP.
Yeah. So like he's going to be on base a lot, but Luis Arraez is not like an incredibly fast guy. He doesn't have a lot of power. And so you have to have someone else drive him in. That is something that this Marlins team is pretty lackluster at doing right now. They made some moves last year that we thought were really good moves in the time. They didn't really pan out. Guys in like Jorge Soler and Avisaíl Garcia. And those moves made sense. They still make sense looking back. They just didn't happen to pan out. And sometimes that happens. Luis Arraez, it kind of gives me a bit of a different feel. It seems like they kind of sold low on Pablo Lopez, or at least didn't sell low, because, I mean, you got a batting champion out of it. But they moved him to move him instead of moving to fill a hole, is kind of what it feels like to me. So,
yeah, I mean, it seems like the Marlins are just kind of going for guys that make more contact, and that was a problem for them. They struck out a bunch last year. They go get Segura, makes a ton of contact. They go get Arraez, makes a bunch of contact. Seems like they're just leaning into that, but they're forgetting about the power part of it. Maybe they think Jesus Sanchez can break out this year. Maybe they think that Garcia and Soler stay healthy and actually play better. That's the path that I see for them to be a better team this year.
So actually, now that you mention that, I actually don't hate it just from the standpoint of like that worked for the Guardians last year with the limiting shifts. Now, like there's theoretically going to be more opportunities for base hits to fall. So guys that make higher contact are going to be more of a premium this year. So maybe it makes sense having Segura and Luis Arraez, expecting Soler and Avisaíl to bounce back a bit, like. It feels like it's a weird move, but it might end up actually panning out and things work out well in Miami. But
and then the side effect of it is that Jazz Chisholm has volunteered to play center field. They don't want to make him their shortstop for some reason. They have not filled that position on their team after trading Miguel Rojas. So that's a big question mark for their team. I think Chisholm is going to be totally fine in center field. It's just like, why do they not even give him a chance to play a shortstop at the major league level?
Yeah, I don't know. And then like, you're also putting Arraez over at second, and Arraez to me feels like he played first base in Minnesota last year. And that kind of does feel like defensively the position he should be playing, but they've got Garrett Cooper there. So now they've taken Jazz, put him in center, put a pretty bad defensive second baseman over at second in a year where we were talking that second base defense is a lot more important this year. Mm-hmm. Joey Wendell is going to be their shortstop. That's kind of like having... Having Joey Wendell at short and having Luis Arraez at second are kind of the exact same thing. Like, you just have a giant hole up the middle in the infield. So I guess it makes sense having Jazz with his speed and center to run down all these ground balls that are going to get through. But, oh well.
Yeah. And then on the twin side, though, I do like it from the twin side because they really bolster their starting rotation. Getting Pablo Lopez in there to join Sonny Gray, Tyler Mahle, Kenta Maeda, Joe Ryan. So it was a weakness of the Twins. Now it's more of a neutral. They have an average rotation probably now, rather than like a below average one.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. And they do still have Bailey Ober and who was the other one that came up last year? I don't know why roster resources is being all weird right now. It won't actually load the whole page.
Oh, yeah, I'm having the same problem. But they had some other guys like Louis Varland in there. So they were starting to build some depth in that rotation, which is a good thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I really like it from the Twins side there. I do think that it takes this Twins team and you lose Arise, who that's a big hit. Losing a batting champion on a team that still really kind of struggled on offense. Obviously, when Buxton was healthy, he was awesome offensively. Correa had a pretty underrated season. But then Arise was like most of the offense for that team last year, it seemed. So you're giving that up. You're moving Kirloff over to first. I think that opens up a spot for Trevor Larnach out in left. But so those are guys young. Who've not shown that they can do much so far. So,
yeah, they're putting some faith in their young position players that they'll actually pan out. The whole thing Kirloff is he's just continued to get hurt every year, and he's never really played extended times without being injured or playing through the injuries or whatever. So maybe he's healthy now.
Yeah. So we'll see. But they weren't the only team to make some moves here in the last couple weeks. We also saw the Mets go out and make yet another contract extension to Jeff McNeil for 4 years and $50 million. So
yeah, I put this one right after Arias because he fits the same mold as Arias, a guy with limited power. Maybe he's a better defender than Arias, but always hits for good batting average. And he's just a solid guy to have in your lineup, I think.
Yeah, and that's a team that can definitely go out and give money to a guy like that and it not be it a, I don't want to say a detriment. It makes a lot more sense for a team like the Mets, just from the standpoint that they have a very potent offense. So bringing in a guy like McNeil, who is more of that average get on base, someone else can drive him in, makes a lot of sense. Whereas if you don't have someone to drive him in, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, let's see. Keeping on the extension train, the Tampa Bay Rays have been on an extension streak, giving Jeffrey Springs, Yandy Diaz, and Pete Fairbanks all multi-year extensions. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on those?
The Rays like to do this. So they're basically buying out the last couple of years of arbitration for these players and then into free agency for some of them. With Jeffrey Springs, I mean, that's a nice payday that he's got himself. He got a 4-year, $31 million deal that buys out 2 years of arbitration, then adds on 2 years into free agency. And then there's a club option for 2027. Yandy Diaz got a 3-year, $24 million deal with the 2026 club option. He was pretty great for them last year as an OBP leadoff man. I love Yandy because he looks like a power hitter, but he bats like Luis Arraez. Like, he's more similar to Luis Arraez than Yordan Alvarez. Even though he looks a lot more like Alvarez. And then Pete Fairbanks, he's an awesome pitcher, yet he's always injured, it seems. So I would love to see Pete Fairbanks put together a full season because I think he could be one of the most dominant relievers in the game. But I'm glad he gets the security now of a 3-year, $12 million deal.
All right. And then going over to the American League Central, we've seen the Royals sign a couple of elder statesmen. They brought back Zach Greinke for 1 year, and then they've also added former Yankees, Reds, and Cubs closer Aroldis Chapman for, I think, a year, right?
Yeah. So Chapman was really bad last year. Seems like he's way past his prime. He just had awful control and command. Still throws really hard. Not quite what he used to back in the day, but maybe they think they can fix him up and flip him at the deadline or something. I guess I don't really.
they should really focus on some of these young pitchers that they've not been able to get right yet.
Yeah, I don't really see the point of this move, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, cool, you went out and got a former reliever of the year, but like, you got him at the wrong time in his career. I was actually a little surprised to see him get picked up at all after the way he pitched last year. It just kind of felt like that was kind of the end for him, and I guess the Royals are going to give him a shot, but it kind of feels like a we've got nothing else to lose kind of move. So, oh well. And then the Royals had also sent former, I don't know if top, was he a top prospect for them?
Probably.
Former top prospect, Adalberto Mondesi, to the Boston Red Sox, where Mondesi is, I guess, going to take over the shortstop job while Trevor Story is out this year. I do have some concerns with Adalberto's health as well, because you lose Xander, you immediately lose Trevor Story for the year, I think, right?
Yeah, he'll be out until late in the season at the earliest.
Yeah, and then you bring in a guy who's, I think, maybe only had one season where he's been over 100 games.
If that, right? He's always been a tantalizing talent. He's extremely fast. He loves to steal bases. He's got power. He plays good defense. But has he ever played 100 games in a season?
I absolutely nailed it. He played 102 games in 2019.
Okay.
And then he has not played over 75 in any other season.
And how many stolen bases did he have in 19?
43.
43 in 102 games.
Yep. So he only had five. Well, he only played 15 games last year. But yeah, that's kind of the big thing for me is Mondesi's healthiest season was 2020, where he played 59 out of 60 games. And that's the most consistent he's been on the field ever. So we'll see if he can stay healthy. And if he can, I mean, he's a solid player. His average, he's not a very high average guy. He's .244 roughly. On base kind of sucks, but like,
OBP skills. He just loves to swing the bat. Yeah.
And he has like a career 30% K rate. So it's one of those that you have him for the defense and the steals. And that's kind of the thing. But where Boston's at right now, they don't have a shortstop. So I guess it makes sense. So we'll see. All right. So that's kind of the main this week in baseball stuff that's happened the last couple of weeks. There's one other pretty big topic that I think you guys are probably surprised I've managed to stay away from yet. And that is former Cardinal Scott Rolen was elected to the Hall of Fame. I think he had 3 votes more than the threshold to get in this year. And it was not a sure thing that he was going to get in this year at all. And so Scott Rolen will be going in with Fred McGriff, who got in the veteran era committee earlier this year, or back in December, I think. And they will be going in here in, I think, July 5th, right? Because it's like the day after we're planning on going, or the day before.
I don't remember the date, I guess.
Yeah. So Scott Rolen, I was kind of thinking about this. Like, we did the whole House of Fame episode here 2 weeks ago. That if you guys haven't listened to that, definitely go do it. We want to hear who you'd have in your House of Fame. Well, we kind of disagree with how the Hall of Fame is right now. It just feels kind of dumb. Like, there's all these arguments about how guys aren't deserving of being a first-year guy, but they're deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. So why are we not just putting them in if they're Hall of Fame worthy? And there's a whole bunch of other problems that we've got with it. But I think what I want to ask you, Gowie, is, so Rolen had like 15 or 20% in year one, or 10% or something. And over the next 5 years, he kept getting more and more support. Part of that is as some of the steroid guys were falling off the ballot with the 10 ballot or the 10 vote maximum per ballot. Okay, maybe I get it that there's going to be some natural progression and people are trying to prioritize. But there's other people who are like saying he's not worthy now. 5 years later, he is. What's changed?
I think the biggest thing that's changed are the voters themselves and how the voters evaluate the players that are on the Hall of Fame ballot. So we probably fall under the group of people that are willing to look at advanced metrics or different ways to evaluate the players that are on the ballot rather than things like the number of home runs, the number of hits they had, the number of all-star appearances. Those things all still count for us, but we're taking into account, you know, the players' WAR, how they rated relative to their peers and against other players of their position at, like, within that era, and then how you can compare them to players of other eras. So trying to do all those things. And I think over the years, there's more voters that are more like us than voters of past. And that's how the popularity of Scott Rolen on the ballot increased over the last 6 years. So that's a good thing, in my opinion, because that's the side of voter I would be if I had a Hall of Fame ballot. That would be the way I would vote, because I see the value in Scott Rolen as a player and how good he was. I think the main reason he wasn't as popular initially was because he was not necessarily the best player in the league. He wasn't a kind of in-your-face superstar type player. He didn't play with the flair, or he didn't really draw any attention to himself while he played or even after he retired or anything. So he was sort of just a quiet guy. He was even overlooked within the era that he played in. So it makes sense that years after, people are still not going to be recognizing him the way that maybe he should be.
Yeah, because other than the MV3 year, 2004 for the Cardinals, where Albert, Edmonds, and Rolen were all in the top four of the MVP, Rolen had only got MVP votes three other times and never finished higher than 14th.
Yeah, and there's let me just interject here with one great example of that. So 2006, the year the Cardinals won the World Series, Scott Rolen was a major part of that World Series team, and he was great in the World Series too. But that year, he hit 296, 369, 518, 22 home runs, 95 RBI. He played in 142 games, and he did not finish in the top 10 of MVP voting, if even the top 20. So those are like amazing numbers.
And he didn't completely get any MVP votes at all.
Yeah. And that is baffling to me. He was amazing that year.
And yeah,
there was zero recognition at the time for that season that he had.
Well, and then go back to his 1998 season. That's his sophomore season, right after he just won Rookie of the Year. And he had a 290, 391, 532, a 140 WRC plus, with 31 home runs, 110 RBIs, 120 runs scored, 14 steals for a third baseman. Like, that's a really, really, really good season with all the old-timey stats that we used in 1998. He had 7 WAR and finished 20th in the MVP, didn't win a Silver Slugger, nothing like that. Just Gold Glove, that's it. So Scott Rolen was such a good, good player, and people didn't appreciate it at the time, and even now, people still don't really appreciate it. I've been hearing for the last week people saying, Scott Rolen doesn't deserve to be in, blah, 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 blah. But you look at like the Hall of Fame statistics, the scores that they use to try and evaluate people's careers to see if they're worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. And Jaws is one of the most recognized Hall of Fame statistics. That's fair to say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So and Jaws is kind of looking at three different things. It looks at your career WAR, which is a stat that pretty much everyone right now kind of at least understands what WAR is trying to do. Maybe not how it is calculated or exactly what it means. Their peak, like 7 years of WAR, how much WAR they accumulated in that. And then there is a Jaws score. And Scott Rolen is above average for third baseman in all three of those. He's awfully close to the average. But that's out of the average Hall of Fame third baseman. Out of 16, he's right in the middle of the 16. And people are saying that he's not worthy. It's like, from all the offensive parts, he's still worthy. He doesn't have the counting stats. He only had 2,000 hits. He only had 316 home runs. He's not a guy like Mike Schmidt. Who Mike Schmidt had, what, 500 and something homer? Or was he a 600 homer guy?
I think he was a 500 homer guy, yeah.
Had probably close to 3,000 hits, if I remember right. Like, he's not Mike Schmidt. But he is probably the single most underrated defensive player of all time. Like, you look at his or his defensive component of WAR, and if it's positive, that means you're a good defender. Usually if you have like something in the 11 to 15, that's like a great defensive season. Scott Rolen consistently put up like 24, 25, like on his defensive component of WAR, which people don't really understand what that means. But just looking at that shows how much more valuable he is on defense than literally anyone else. And yeah. He still managed to have 70 WAR in his career with very, very good offensive numbers. And it just, I don't like that people say that he's not worthy because he very much is.
Yeah. I think you kind of hit on it, so I won't repeat everything, but the biggest thing that people might say that don't want Scott Rolen in the Hall of Fame or whatever are that he only had 316 home runs and just over 2,000 hits. So those are not necessarily up to the mark, but when you consider all the his total body of work, playing 17 years, winning the World Series, making multiple All-Star teams, being the best defensive third baseman of his era. I mean, to me, he's a pretty clear Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and I mean, you and I were talking about it yesterday. He's actually really, really similar to Brooks Robinson. Brooks Robinson obviously played a lot longer, so his counting stats do look higher. But from like the rate, like his rate stats, his profile is like a player. He's very, very similar to Brooks Robinson. And Brooks is a guy that nobody's going to bat an eye whenever you say he's a Hall of Famer. So it's like it kind of just seems like it's kind of a hypocritical argument to me to say that one is and the other's not. Now, before it sounds like I'm just complaining, I do actually want to ask you a question kind of as to what we can take moving forward from Scott Rolen getting in, not just getting in, but getting in relatively quickly. I mean, you get 10 years on the ballot. He made it in year six. There's some guys that don't get in until last minute, but it feels like now we're starting to value defense more. As we advance in or through the years here in baseball, and Scott Rolen is kind of opening the door for a couple of these modern guys to maybe make the Hall of Fame, right? Well, at least in my opinion, how do you see that, affecting some future Hall of Fame cases?
I definitely think it's going to play a factor in the modern third baseman like Manny Machado, Nolan Arenado, who's probably the most direct comparison to Scott Rolen because of their defensive excellence and their recognition for that too, winning all the Gold Gloves. And then Jose Ramirez, who's probably part of the discussion, but maybe a little bit behind Machado and Arenado right now, with still years to go in their careers. But now we're looking at all the contributions they make beyond just the counting stats, which guys like Arenado and Machado are going to have probably at the ends of their careers, because they play a lot. They started early, and they're just piling up those hits, piling up those home runs. And when we're at the end of their careers, I think they're going to be, you know, compared directly to Scott Rolen, for example. And he got in, so that's going to help their case, I would think.
Yeah, I would agree. And I kind of am, for a slightly different reason, I would assume that it would help a guy like Joey Votto, who Votto is still going to get in because of his bat if he gets in. But like he doesn't have the insane counting stats. He's going to be somewhere at 2,000, maybe 2,500 hits. Maybe he's only at what, 300 and something homers. Is that but he is such a unique player in his own right that we do value Joey Votto for what he's been now, but it kind of makes me wonder. So Joey Votto's not even, that's the wrong one. He's at 2,093 hits right now. But it kind of makes me wonder if Scott Rolen is going to be the first of many people that we say, screw the counting stats. What was he able to do on the field? Andrew Jones maybe benefits from that, but I think people are still going to say his longevity wasn't there because he didn't play deep into his 30s, even though he started at the age of 19. What can you do? The voters are old. Andrew's only got like 6 more years on the ballot. So I hope he gets in, but I don't know.
Yeah, Votto's case is going to be really interesting because he is, like you said, he's a very unique player, and he's got something that most players in the Hall of Fame don't. That's a 412 OBP for his career.
Yeah, and so, that's and, one of those that, like,
that fits OBP in is... with the conversation of how players are valued. You know, way back when, the walk was not like seen as a good thing, really. It was like, oh, this guy's being passive. But now we understand, you know, a walk is very valuable. That's how you score runs. So...
Well, and I think the biggest thing that is his hamper that I think Scott Rolen is going to be pretty comparable in is his career war. Because right now, Joey Votto's sitting at about 57.9 F war. The end of his career, if he's only at 65, 70 war, like, is that enough to get him in? And I think now that we're evaluating people like Rolen for their defensive contributions, Votto for his on-base ability, maybe that helps push him over the top, even though his overall war may not say that he's a surefire, absolutely slam dunk Hall of Famer.
Well, I'll tell you what, it looks like Todd Helton's going to make the Hall of Fame next year. I think that's fairly likely. He's very close.
He made 73%. I think he was like 11 votes shy.
So Todd Helton getting to the Hall of Fame is really good for Joey Votto's chances, I would say.
Okay. All right. I mean, I could talk about Scott Rolen for hours. You know that. We did it yesterday. But I do think we should probably move on a little bit to what our main topic for today is. And that's these guys who want to be Scott Rolen. These guys who, they're still prospects. They're still grinding through the minors with the ultimate goal of making it to Cooperstown, a place where Scott Rolen is now calling a second home. We're about to start spring training, and so we're getting a lot of non-roster invitee lists. We're getting a lot of 40-man roster who's coming up to big league camp lists. And some of these guys are going to make the teams this year in the big leagues, and some of them are going to make huge, huge impacts this year for their teams. And I wanted to talk a little bit about some of those players, who we think is going to make the biggest contributions, and some things like that. So it's mostly going to be around probably some of the top prospects, but if there's some other guys that you can think of that maybe are going to make a big impact this year and aren't a top prospect, like That's kind of who I'm trying to get to. And I think the absolute biggest, well, so the easiest example for me, I'm going to be a homer. We're going to start right in St. Louis. The best example I could give to kind of introduce this topic is Jordan Walker. Number four prospect in baseball, the Cardinals' number one prospect, outfielder, third base, and he is insanely good. He is going to be starting at AAA this year, or is he? So Jordan Walker is being invited to spring training with the Cardinals, and I kind of do see a chance that he could make the opening day roster. As one of the extra outfield or not extra outfielders, as a starting outfielder. Like, I don't know, so right now the Cardinals have got, sorry, I'm trying to get Jordan Walker's numbers pulled up here on the side while I'm talking. So between Nootbaar, Carlson, Yepez, Tyler O'Neill, Alec Burleson, and Jordan Walker, the Cardinals have a ton of options in the outfield. So that kind of makes you think that maybe Jordan Walker's not going to get a shot at opening day. But last year, through he played AAA the whole season, 119 games. What did I say? Did I say triple?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. He played AA all season, a 306, 388, 510 slash line with 19 home runs and 22 stolen bases. Like, he dominated AA. Then he went to the Arizona Fall League, and obviously it's a short or a small sample size, but he performed well in the Arizona Fall League. And so even though he's not played at AAA yet, if he shows out in spring, I could see him making the team potentially. So
I definitely agree. I think there's a really good chance he makes the team. The one thing that maybe might hold him back, or the Cardinals might hold him back for, could be legitimately for his defense, because he's not going to be playing third base, his natural position. He's going to be playing probably right field. He just switched there in the middle of last season. He played there at the Fall League, so maybe he needs a little bit more seasoning. But from everything that I've read about him, the guy's super athletic, and he's going to do just fine as a right fielder. He's got a great arm. So we're going to see Walker very soon this season, whether it be opening day or sometime within the first couple months of the year.
Yeah, and he is hands down the best prospect that the Cardinals have had in since Oscar Tavares, I would say. So, like, there's a lot of hope with this kid. He's got insane power. He's got a really good hit tool, pretty solid speed. So it'll be exciting to see him come up. So I guess now that we've kind of talked about me being a homer here, what guys are you interested in? What teams are you interested in?
I'm really interested to see what's going on with the Dodgers, because I feel like we, on this podcast, we usually like talk about the Dodgers a good bit during the season. We're always talking about how amazing they are and they do everything well and everything's going good for the Dodgers. This offseason, they've been really quiet. And they've quietly lost a bunch of their starting players that have been mainstays in their lineup for years, like Cody Bellinger, Justin Turner, Trey Turner the last couple of years. How are they going to fill those spots on their team? It seems like they're going to rely on their young prospects and young players to fill in. Like, Gavin Lux is probably going to play shortstop for this team. But who else do they have? I see Miguel Vargas being one of the main guys who is going to benefit from Justin Turner now being gone. He was really awesome at AA and AAA last year. I'm going to find his numbers in a second, but seems like he's a guy that can play second base and third base. Last year, he hit...
So AAA, he was 304, 404, 511, which is absolutely insane.
So that's like Joey Votto numbers for his career at AAA. And he only struck out 14% of the time while walking 13% of the time. This guy seems like he's going to be ready day one for the Dodgers to play in their starting lineup.
Yeah, and the Dodgers right now, like, This is kind of a weird season. Like, they have a ton of guys who have been able to play all over the field for years. I mean, Max Muncy has played first, second, and third. You've had Chris Taylor, who plays every position known to man. Gavin Lux has moved around quite a bit. And now it seems like they're going to have to basically put people in a spot and leave them there. Like, Max Muncy is probably the third baseman. Gavin Lux is probably the shortstop. And Miguel Vargas is probably taking that second base job and running with it.
Yeah. And another guy I'll mention is center fielder James Outman, who's not your traditional prospect because he's much older than these normal top prospect type guys. I think he's 26 already, or 25. But he is one of the most athletic guys like in all of baseball. He's got a great arm, can play true center field defense, big power, big speed. Right now, Roster Resource thinks that Trace Thompson's the starting center fielder. I do not, like, with all respect to Trace Thompson, I don't think he's going to be going out there 140 games for the Dodgers in center field. I think James Outman's got a great opportunity here to kind of, he fits in the same path as Cody Bellinger, being that really athletic guy that does a lot of things on the baseball field really well. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how he does. Maybe that's part of the reason why the Dodgers felt okay moving on from Bellinger.
Yeah. And Outman has like his weakest tool is probably his contact tool. And so far in the minors, that has not really been too big of an issue. He's hit two. Let's see. Last year he hit 293 across double and triple A. And then he came up, and granted, it's only 16 plate appearances in the majors, but he did fairly well in his four games in the majors as well. So, like, if he can keep that up, like, he's definitely has a good shot of taking that center field job because he's got pretty decent power. Like, yeah. He had I undersold that. He had 32 home runs across double, triple, and MLB last year.
Yeah.
That's pretty good power.
Right.
So, and then the Dodgers also kind of have some missing pieces there in their rotation, though, too. So,
yes, they do.
I know all of my MLB The Show folks know one of the two guys that I'm going to mention, but Bobby Miller, I'm guessing he's going to be a pretty big piece on this team this year. The dude throws, what, 100?
Yeah, I think he hits like 102.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. But Bobby Miller is huge, huge speed or a huge velo guy. His fastball grades out at a 65, but then his slider and his curve are equally good. So, like, or at least according to the scouting reports. But in AAA last year, he had a 3.38 ERA in only 21 innings. And he pitched 91 innings at AA, a 4.45 ERA. So that wasn't great, but he did strike out a lot of hitters. So if he can keep up the strikeouts and keep his walk rate down, which what was his walk rate last year? 7%. That's not terrible. So, yeah, if he could keep his 30 to 32% K rate and a 7% walk rate, he'll be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
another guy I won't go into detail, but Gavin Stone is another starting pitching prospect for the Dodgers. And they've got the opportunity there too, because we know that Clayton Kershaw usually is not going to hold up for 180 innings over the course of the season. He'll be down for some time. Tony Gonsolin's dealt with injuries. Syndergaard, Dustin May. You need more than the five starters that start the season to get you through the season. So Gavin Stone, Bobby Miller, keep an eye on them.
So moving on from the Dodgers, though, and I want to talk a little bit about the Rockies. And I know I'm going to try and not be mean to the Rockies today. They do have a couple prospects that have a pretty good shot of making a big impact on this team. One of them is slotted in right now by Roster Resource as the starting shortstop for the Colorado Rockies in Ezekiel Tovar, 21-year-old prospect out of Venezuela. He did play last year for, what, 9 games? Didn't really do too well in the majors in his 9 games here. Struggled a bit. But in double and triple A last year, he hit about .325, 14 home runs, 17 steals, not a big strikeout guy. So, and he plays fairly good defense too. So, actually he grades out really, really highly on defense. So he's probably going to make a huge impact on that team. Probably more with his glove than his bat, but it's a team that has a lot of needs. So having a pretty stout defender there up the middle is going to be good, be big for them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he does make the team. Right now, I know they have no other real options at shortstop, but the guy maxed out at 104 games played in 2021. He's barely played 300 games in his career at all levels. So we're talking about a super inexperienced guy. So I could see him really struggling out of the gate, but long term, this guy looks like he could be good. But then again, he's on the Rockies, so they'll figure out a way to screw with him a little bit first.
Oh, of course. And then they'll trade him in 3 years.
Yeah.
Anyone else in the Rockies you want to talk about?
Nolan Jones is a guy that they traded for that I guess didn't pan out with the Guardians, but he used to be he's a former top prospect. And if they give him some run here, I'd like to see what he can do.
And he is a first base, third base. So CJ Cron and Ryan McMahon are kind of right there. So it'll be interesting to see, and Eluris Montero as well. So it'll be interesting to see how Nolan Jones fits into that mix. But yeah, I could definitely see him breaking in with the Rockies and seeing what he can do. So let's see what other teams you got. You want to talk about a bit.
We've been going all NL West. Do you want to stay here? Or do you want to go somewhere else?
That is up to you. I know where I want to go next, but I'm going to let you pick one first.
Yeah, let's talk about the Diamondbacks real quick. Cause we were talking about them pre-show about how they're really building something that's looking very promising. They've got a bunch of top prospects. They've got prospects that are not going to debut this year, like Drew Jones and Jordan Lawler. He might debut, who knows? But they've got guys right on the precipice of the majors, like Corbin Carroll, who's by some outlets number one prospect in baseball right now. They just traded for a really good catching prospect in Gabriel Moreno. And then they've got starting pitchers coming out of everywhere. Brandon Pfaadt, Ryan Nelson, Dre Jameson.
Is that Pfaadt with 10 A's?
Yes, 10 A's.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
I like what they're doing. Yeah.
It's going to be a really interesting year for the Diamondbacks. This is a team that could be sneaky good if some of these guys kind of pan out. Especially some of those starting pitchers. So, I want to actually jump over to the American League and go to the Central real quick. So there's not really a whole lot of huge prospects, in the Central that are probably going to make a huge impact this year, but there are a couple who have a chance to actually break camp with the team. And the White Sox are, basically have a four-headed race for their right field job. They've got two prospects in Oscar Colas and Yoelki Cespedes, who will be showing up to spring with their eyes on that job, going up against some veteran defensive first fielders in Adam Haseley and Billy Hamilton, and there might have been another. I don't remember.
Jake Mariznick.
But it really does feel like this is the time for Colas and Cespedes to, if they show up in spring, they'll make the team as the starting right fielder. And these are guys who are incredibly highly rated prospects. Both of them signed out of Cuba here, 2021 for Cespedes and 2022 for Colas. So they're a bit on the older side for a prospect, but they've only been stateside for a very short amount of time. So it'll be interesting to see how they can do. And I really think that having a pretty potent bat that's naturally an outfielder is a huge plus for a White Sox team that seems to be filling their outfield with a bunch of DHs. So I'm excited to see how that works out.
Yeah, the only thing I'll warn about both these guys are they seem like they have some strikeout issues. Colas, he only played seven games in AAA, but he struck out 36% of the time. Cespedes struck out over 30% of the time at AA as a 24-year-old last year. So these guys probably not going to come in and blow the doors off the guaranteed rate field, but you never know.
I mean, Yoan Moncada had a 212 strikeout season.
And how did that turn out for him? How did he turn out?
You weren't supposed to ask that follow-up question. Dang.
Sorry.
But then the other team in the AL Central that has some pretty interesting prospects is the Cleveland Guardians. And if you know how their season went last year, they just kept calling guys up. And that team was basically led by a bunch of rookies. And it worked out pretty darn well last year with Stephen Kwan, with
Oscar Gonzalez.
I think we saw the first couple of appearances of Brian Rocchio last year.
We saw the first couple of appearances of Gabriel Arias.
Gabriel Arias. Yeah. And Bo Naylor. But this year, they've got even more prospects in the pipeline that are pretty darn close. And George Valera, who I think is actually an outfielder, which is
center fielder, yeah.
Really, really rare for the Guardians to have an outfielder. Pretty much all of their prospects tend to be middle infield, which we'll get to them in a minute. But then they've got Daniel Espino, Bo Naylor, Brian Rocchio, Tanner Bibby, Gavin Williams, all these guys who are really, really good prospects. And the way that the Guardians use their prospects, they're probably all going to get a shot to produce here. And if a couple of them pop off, kind of go Stephen Kwan style, this could be a really good season for the Guardians.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome to see Josh Naylor and Bo Naylor play together on the same team. Bo Naylor is a really good prospect as a catcher. So I'll be interested to see if he can take over, you know, a starter's role by the middle of the season or what happens there.
Yeah. All right. What other prospects you got that you're excited about?
Okay, we got to talk about the Yankees and their shortstop situation. Seems like they've been sitting out the free agent and trade market. As far as like the big name guys, they haven't gone after the Correas or the Swansons or anything like that. And a lot of people think the reason is because of shortstop prospect Anthony Volpe, who made it to AAA last year and seemed like he struggled at the beginning of the year at AA, but then he really turned it on by the end of the year and played well at AAA. Really good defender. Seems like he's a really natural hitter and he's got all the makings of a star. So you've got to think that Anthony Volpe is going to be starting for the Yankees at shortstop sometime during this season. I don't know if that's opening day, but what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be opening day unless he really shows up in spring, because if I remember right, Volpe did have some struggles in the minors last year.
He did.
So they'll probably give him a little bit more time, whether he needs it or not. But yeah, Volpe is a really, really good young player. I would expect him to take that job. They do also have Oswald Peraza, who also is a shortstop and did make his debut last year. And he's a really good prospect as well. Like,
yeah,
these were both top 100 guys.
Maybe he has more power than Volpe. Like, there's a lot of stuff to like. So it almost feels like if Volpe's the guy, Peraza has to get traded, and he could very well be a starter for the Oakland A's or something.
Yeah. Sticking in the AL East, the Red Sox have a pretty big prospect that is pretty much guaranteed to make the team in Tristan Casas. And Tristan Casas, I actually don't even remember what position he plays, but
he's first baseman.
He is the first baseman. So Casas and Bobby Dalbec, I'm curious to see how that works. Because Dalbec is also a first baseman. But yeah, Tristan Casas is definitely ready for the big leagues this year. He last year in AAA, 273, 382, 481, 11 homers in 72 games. Doesn't really strike out too much. He's 21% K rate there in AAA, but a 14% walk rate. His OBP is crazy good. So it seems like this Boston team that really doesn't have a whole lot of big hitters is going to be calling on their top prospect here in Tristan Casas pretty quick.
Yeah, I think Casas he's going to be a good quality big leaguer for a while. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be amazing, but he's going to be a solid first baseman hitter-wise. So Red Sox have something fun to look forward to other than Adalberto Mondesi stealing 40 bases.
Let's see. Got to talk about the Orioles, right?
We have to.
Let's skip them. So the Rangers. The Orioles have the other number one prospect in baseball, and I say the other because, as Gautam mentioned, Corbin Carroll, according to some lists, is the number one. The other is Gunnar Henderson. Shortstop prospect for the Baltimore Orioles, and he is really good. Shortstop, third base, and both are positions that the Orioles definitely need an upgrade on. I think right now they're looking at Jorge Mateo at short and Ramon Arias, at third base. So Gunnar Henderson is definitely got a chance to make this opening day roster and show up for the Orioles, similar to how Adley did last year, adding him to the mix with Ryan Mountcastle, Cedric Mullins. You're starting to put together a really, really good young core. So yeah.
With Henderson, I think I'm actually just going to read directly from Keith Law's write up on him. You should check out his top 100 prospects list. In The Athletic. So he says about Henderson, he's at least an average defender at short, more than good enough to stay at the position, but is at least a 70 defender at third and could have a Scott Rolen-like upside if he stays at the hot corner. Then he goes on to say, Rolen's a Hall of Famer, so I don't throw around that comparison lightly, but Henderson looks like a 25-plus homer, high OBP guy who spends 15 years on the left side of an infield. So major praise for Gunnar Henderson.
Yeah. And he's not the only big prospect with a chance to make the opening day roster for the Orioles either. Grayson Rodriguez looks like he might be able to make that rotation right now too. Grayson is their number two prospect. And this is an Orioles team that is loaded with prospects right now. Like, they've got a ton of other guys who middle infield guys that could make an impact this year. But these are the two that you should really watch out for. If you're a baseball card collector, these are the two that you've been collecting for a couple of years now. Keep at it. Their values are about to go up if they make the opening day roster. Probably. Hashtag not financial advice. All right. Let's see if we could get through just a couple more teams before we got to go here. You want to go to the AL West or the NL Central/East?
Let's go to the AL West.
Okay. You want to go or me?
You can go.
All right. Let's go with the Angels. The Angels are a team that they just lost one of their catchers to retirement in Kurt Suzuki. And so they are planning on filling that hole with their top prospect, Logan Ohapi, who came over in one of the trades. I believe he was the one that came back for Brandon Marsh. And then the Mickey Moniak was a separate deal on the same day, I think. But Logan Ohapi is a really, really good young catching prospect. And it's looking like he might be able to take over the starting job from Max Stassi, or at least come in and basically rotate games with Stassi for a year or two. So sure. He's definitely a guy to look out for here in the AL West. AL West.
Yeah, he had insane numbers last year in the minors. 283, 416, 544 with 26 homers, 70 walks, and just 74 strikeouts in 104 games. So he was like, that was probably one of the better minor league seasons of any player last year. So looking forward to him getting in the Angels lineup, and he's not really being blocked by anyone to get to that spot.
You don't think Max Stassi is blocking him?
Not really.
Wow, the disrespect. Right. I think the other team that's got some pretty good young players that are going to make a pretty big impact this year is the Texas Rangers. And we've seen a couple of these guys already in the majors, in Josh Jung, who ended up getting hurt last year, but he'll be their third baseman this year. The best third baseman they've had since Adrian Beltre. So I think that's a pretty fair statement to make, right?
Can't even think of anyone else.
Well, exactly. And then Sam Huff is one of their catching prospects. So we'll see Jonah Heim as the primary backstop for a while, but Sam Huff has so much power that I imagine we'll get to see him at some point here this year. Whether they move him out from catcher and use him as a DH or what, like, they're going to want that power in that lineup. This is a team that is trying to go for, they're trying to go for the division. And if things pan out and their rotation stays healthy, Sam Huff and Josh Jung probably going to be right there trying to help him out. And if that rotation doesn't stay healthy, what do they got coming up, Gary?
They got Jack Leiter and Cole Wynn, who were big prospects coming into 2022. They both had really rough seasons, but that doesn't mean that the future outlook is not still bright. So they've got a super upgraded rotation from where they were a year ago. So the Rangers are kind of hoping that they won't need these guys to be major factors for them, but they actually have a lot of potential to be front of the line starters for years to come.
All right. So I think we've got a little bit of NL East action that we should probably talk about.
Probably Andrew Painter with the Phillies. Andrew Painter is he still only 19 years old?
That's just, I think so.
Ridiculous. He was born in the year 2003. That's not a real year. I don't like that.
That year didn't even happen. We skipped it.
So Andrew Painter was a 2021 first-round pick by the Phillies. He's a massive human being. He is 6'7", 215 pounds. Super hard fastball. And he was downright dominant in high A and double A and low A, actually, last year. He rocketed through. Basically, the worst ERA he had was a 2.54 at AAA, and that was over 28 innings. He was striking out, to tell you how well he did at low A, he struck out 16 batters per 9 innings. So it was just a complete joke for him. They're talking about Painter breaking with the opening day rotation. And with this Phillies team, they're set on trying to return to the World Series. They're going to need a guy like Painter to get them there and then be a factor in the postseason. So I don't know if he's going to be there on opening day, but I know he's going to play a factor in this season in some fashion.
Well, and for reference, that 16 Ks per nine is better than prime Chris Sale.
Yeah.
Like, prime Chris Sale was what, 14 and like 13, 14 Ks per nine?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. 16 is nuts. Granted, it's at low, or it's at A ball.
Yeah, but it was still so 12. It was still almost 12 at double A. So,
yeah. So this guy can pitch. So that'll be exciting to see. The Mets also got a couple of young guys, and these guys debuted last year in Brett Beatty and Francisco Alvarez. And Francisco Alvarez is now a little bit blocked again because they went out and got Omar Narvaez and have Tomas Nito. So unless something happens there and they want to use Francisco Alvarez as like the backup catcher and DFA Nito or trade him or something, I kind of is hard to see a path for Francisco Alvarez in the near future. Brett Beatty, on the other hand, he plays the hot corner, and he plays the hot corner well. He's a plus defender at third base, and then at AAA AAA is not a good one to talk about. He only played six games. At AA last year, in 89 games, he hit .312, .406, .544 with a 160 WRC+. Like, that's AA ball. Definitely different than the majors, but the kid can play. A 12% walk rate, and that's been consistent across all levels of the minors. A K rate about 25%. That's high, but not that insane, especially in today's game. Like, that'll play. If he can do that in the majors, that'll play. And I don't remember, is Eduardo Escobar on the roster right now?
He is. So I would say that that's the Mets' weakest starting position player right now. Not that Eduardo Escobar is like that bad. He's fine. He's probably fine for their lineup too, but Beatty could really just help them take the next step in making this lineup even better. As far as Alvarez, I don't know if he's necessarily blocked. I think this guy's such a good hitter that he can take some DH at bats. If they feel more comfortable with one of the other catchers doing the actual catching, he's a good enough hitter that he'll find his way into the lineup, I think.
That's fair. All right. So do you have any other teams you want to talk about? Because if not, we are getting pretty close to the end here.
Let's do one more Brewers and just talk about Sal Frelick real quick. Right. So Sal Frelick, he's one outfielder that the Brewers have that has not made his debut yet, but he seems like he's very close. They have other decent options in the outfield, like Garrett Mitchell, who did play a little bit last year. He's probably going to get a good run this season, but Frelick, amazing defender. He's kind of like a smaller dude, sort of like a Corbin Carroll. Doesn't really strike out that much. He's got power, got speed. I like Sal Frelick to be playing every day by the end of the season for the Brewers.
And when you say he's got power, he's not a 30, 40 home run guy. He's probably a 20 home run guy. But for a center fielder with speed, with a really good contact tool, that's definitely, definitely going to play.
Yeah.
So. All right. Cool. Well, I think that pretty well does it for guys that we're looking forward to this year. There's obviously dudes on every team that could come up and make a big impact. These are just some of the big names this year that coming out of spring could be on your team sooner than later. So if you think that we've missed anyone, let us know. You can let us know on our Twitter or Facebook at Getaway Day Pod or in the YouTube comments. You can also let us know what you think about the podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any of those, really. Or by reaching out to us again through the YouTube comments, Twitter, Facebook, at Getaway Day Pod. We do also have an Instagram and a TikTok that I probably need to post to. I don't think I did this week. So I'll do better on that. Let's see. What else am I missing? We have the survey. Don't forget to take the survey. We're trying to get a little bit of information about the demographic of all you who listen to the pod. See kind of what you want to see a little bit more of, if you want some more guests, if you want us to do little games, if you want Gowie to wear a silly hat, put it in the survey. I vote silly hat. Help me come up with ideas. I'd really appreciate it. But I think that pretty much does it for us tonight, unless you've got any closing statements. No closing statements. So we're going to leave it here. We will see you back here next week. If you enjoy this episode, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app or YouTube so that you never miss a future episode. On YouTube, you got to hit that subscribe button and that little notification bell to get notifications. You can can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok at Getaway Day Pod.